Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And, well, before we get to our guest, I just wanted to briefly share with you some of the thoughts I've gotten the last couple of days, speaking to a number of people who are analyzing what's going on in the Near East and the Middle East. Now, you have to understand that what's really going on today is that our attention is being intensely focused on important things like who's going to win the NBA, what are the baseball teams doing across America, who is Anna Nicole Smith's child's father, things of great eternal significance of that sort. But rather than really talking about the possibility that we are moving into World War III, why, of course, we have people's minds, their ears tickled, and they're thinking of all sorts of unimportant things. Well, one of our regular participants, a gentleman who has been with intelligence for many years, just got back from Paris, from the Near East and Middle East, and his take on what's going on is that he thinks we'll be at war with Iran by July or August. And the reason for this is there's a small group of the mullahs who really want a war with the United States. The Iranian people don't want a war with the United States. The American people don't want a war with Iran. But it would appear that our leaders and their leaders are intent upon war, which of course would be, well, lead to a clash of civilizations and certainly could take us into World War III. And of course, the thought is apparently that the Iranians think that they can hurt the United States very, very badly. Certainly we can knock out their nuclear facilities, but we don't have the troops to invade their country effectively. And if they attack us, or if we attack them, why, of course, it will unite the Iranian people, who are really very, very unhappy with the ruling mullahs, but it will unite the people behind the mullahs. Furthermore, the economic harm that could be done to the United States by cutting off the oil supplies through the Straits of Hormuz, by an attack on Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and their oil facilities, and by Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, cutting off oil to the United States, could have a profound and disastrous effect on our economy, with oil going up to maybe $100, $125 a barrel, and the price of gasoline at the pump going to $10 a gallon. What would that do to our economy? Is it possible that a country as small as Iran would be able to hurt us economically? And I would like to suggest there's a very real possibility, because we've abandoned the concepts that made America great. We've gotten involved with other countries all throughout the world in their internal affairs. But even more than that, of course, we've become the greatest debtor nation in the world. And we're having to borrow almost $3.5 billion every day, a couple of billion dollars from other countries, just to pay our debts. And there's just no way we can afford to get into another war. And the only way we could do that is simply to destroy the value of our own currency. And the implications of this are frightening as far as the survival of our nation as a free society. Well, with that as a background, let's get to our special guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney. And he's going to talk about the source of our freedom, why we are free. David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. David, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Stan. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to be on your show and to be able to talk to people about these important issues. And what you're talking about of what's happening in the Middle East wouldn't be happening at all if our country was to abide by the law, the supreme law of the land.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, David, go ahead and pick the story up.
Well, we've been, over the past several months, looking at the United States Constitution And now we're looking at the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, and we've walked through most of them, but let me just briefly review the last two of the 10 amendments that form the Bill of Rights. The Ninth Amendment was actually in response to an objection. Alexander Hamilton, as well as some others, mentioned that a Bill of Rights could be dangerous because all the rights that you have been given by God could not be listed at one time. If you were to sit down this evening and write a list and you say, okay, by midnight your list has to be completed, you might forget something or you might leave something out or you might not even be aware of one of your God-given rights. It wouldn't be on that list. And the danger in that is if you have a Bill of Rights that a future government might assume that if a right is not listed in that Bill of Rights, therefore it is forfeited. You don't have it because you didn't list it in your Bill of Rights. And so the Ninth Amendment actually answers that objection because it says the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others, that is, other rights, retained by the people. That is, you have rights given to you by God, and as our founders clearly expressed in the Declaration of Independence, those rights are inalienable. That is, they cannot be taken from you because they've been given to you by God as His creation. You are made in His image, and as a creature made in His image, He has given you rights. They come from God, not from government. Therefore, although a government may abuse your rights and violate your rights, it cannot take your rights from you. You have those rights. And as they clearly said also, one of the rights that you have is when your government, your civil government, abuses your God-given rights, violates those God-given rights, you have a God-given right to alter or to abolish that form of government and to institute a form of government that will secure and protect your God-given rights, which is exactly what our founders said King George III was doing, and therefore they had a warrant from God to separate from England and to establish a form of government that would secure the God-given rights of the people. That's the whole purpose of government. That's the whole reason civil government exists. And if civil government is in violation of those rights, it needs to be altered or to be abolished. So this statement says that there's rights beyond what a Bill of Rights, this particular list of these ten amendments, that there's rights beyond these ten amendments here, rights that are not even spoken of in the Constitution or the Declaration at all.
Hold that thought, David. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and David is simply discussing the ninth of the Ten Amendments. And basically, with this concept that there are really certainly rights that are not even necessarily mentioned. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. That's what the Ninth Amendment says. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And as David was saying, and this is so vitally important, our rights in America, different than any other nation in the world, are acknowledged to come from God. How can we say that? Well, because, of course, the Constitution was simply a continuation of the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration was like the Articles of Incorporation, and then, of course, the Constitution was how we were going to secure the rights that had been established by our by the Declaration. In fact, if you read the last statement of the Constitution, it talks about the date of the signing and then so many years since the founding of our country, which was, of course, the Declaration of Independence. And the Declaration basically said that our rights came from God and that governments are instituted among men to secure those rights, obtaining their authority from with the will of the people. So, basically, America is different because our rights come from God. Now, that's why the Supreme Court, the Masons who took over our Supreme Court, had to take all mention of God out of our schools, had to take prayer out of our schools. Why? Because they had to do away with that concept that our rights came from God. Oh, no, no. We've got to convince the people that the rights come from government, and if government gives rights, government can take them away. And isn't it amazing today that they never teach this in our schools? In fact, in many of the textbooks where they discuss the Declaration of Independence, they've removed that concept, you know, of God, of the Creator that gave us our rights, that all men were created equal and endowed by their Creator, and they simply take that statement out. Why? Because if they can destroy our belief in God, then they can destroy our freedom. So pick up the story, David.
And that's exactly what they are seeking to do, because the only way you can rearrange our government so that it is not a republic based upon a biblical foundation of law is to do exactly that, take away the people's memory and understanding of these things, which is the exact opposite of what we're seeking to do. We're seeking to reconnect people with the view of law and government that the founders of our country had, and actually what is, technically speaking, truly the supreme law of the land. And therefore, any laws made in violation of this supreme law of the land are no law at all. They're lawless. They're ink that some legislature has spilled on a piece of paper and some governor or president has signed. But it is not law if it violates the supreme law of the land, our U.S. Constitution and the amendments. And so Hamilton's objection about the idea, if you wrote down your Bill of Rights, you wouldn't include all of them, was answered to say, no, this document does not expand the power of government. It restricts the power of the federal government. It sets a wall around the playing field, so to speak. And the Bill of Rights is that wall that says these are the limits upon the federal government. It cannot go beyond this. And one of the things the federal government cannot do is violate the God-given rights of we the people in any way, shape, or form. Now, the key word here in this statement is you shall not construe or deny or disparage other rights retained by the people. And so the Ninth Amendment in no way is giving courts the authority to create new rights out of thin air. Rather, the Ninth Amendment is protecting only those rights which were already recognized and already protected under then-existing English and American common law. Of course, common law stretches way back into the myths of history before Magna Carta. People knew what their God-given rights were. How did they know what their God-given rights were? They read them in the Bible. For example, the Bible says, thou shalt not steal. Well, that negative command, thou shalt not, limiting human behavior, is, on the flip side, a positive indicator of a God-given right that we the people have. What's the God-given right? It's the right to own property, whether it's land or whether it's objects or it's an automobile. You have the right to own property. God has given you that right, and therefore God has given us the command, thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not violate the property of another human being. Now, communism denies that that's a right. It says, no, nobody has any right to any private property. Where do they get that idea? They certainly don't get it from the Bible. Actually, they don't get it from any religious text. It's from their atheistic, God-hating philosophy of Karl Marx and so on that they get the idea that you don't have any right to own property. But every human being on the face of planet Earth has God's law written in their heart, and they know that they have a right to own property. Why, my 2-year-old, one of the first things that she says to her sister when they're playing with toys, it's mine. And, you know, some of the first words out of a baby's mouth when they're interacting with other children, it's mine. They understand, even as an infant, the right to own property. And it's only the fools that are Marxists and so forth that deny this God-given right. So the Ninth Amendment protects us from what are existing God-given rights. It does not give the courts authority to create new rights. And yet our Supreme Court, in violation of God's law and in violation of this Constitution, which means when they violate it, they should have been impeached if we had a legislature with a gut and the willingness to follow the Constitution to obey their oath of office, they would have impeached the Supreme Court when they made the opinion of Roe v. Wade, saying, well, now abortion is legal. So they're saying, a woman has a right to kill her unborn child. Well, is that a God-given right? No, the court was saying it was them giving this right to the people. Not a God-given right. You have no God-given right to kill another human being by murder, by abortion. That's not a right. You have no right to do that which is wrong. I mean, it may sound pretty simplistic, but that's the truth of the matter. Rights are in obedience to God's law. You have no right to disobey God's law. You read the scriptures, it's very clear that the purpose that God instituted civil government, and by the way, God is the one who instituted civil government after the flood, when he gave the commands to Noah and his sons and so on. And then in the New Testament, we read what the Apostle Paul wrote, often misquoted and misunderstood, Romans 13. He says repeatedly here that the civil magistrate is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Well, how are you going to define evil? How are you going to define what the minister of God is to do? It's by the law of God. The minister of God is to apply the law of God. He's to punish the evildoers and to reward the righteous. So when the Supreme Court ruled in Roe v. Wade, they were violating the Ninth Commandment, the Ninth Amendment, because they were creating a new quote-unquote right, not a real right, because it's technically not right to murder the unborn. They created a whole new right, basically speaking as if they were God. And that's the tragic thing, that these evil black-robed men and women believe they are above God. How do we know that? Well, go down a few more years from Roe v. Wade and the case Lawrence v. Texas, in which they declared all laws prohibiting sodomy in all of the 50 states were outlawed. They were illegal. Basically, if you read that opinion, and it's a lengthy opinion, but I've read it, they say that God's law, which says sodomy is a crime against nature, that God's law is unconstitutional, God's law is illegal, and furthermore, God's law is even immoral. Imagine that. These wicked black-robed judges saying that God's law is immoral. Well, there's a hot spot in hell reserved for each one of them that hold to that opinion and don't repent before the day of their death. But the Ninth Amendment does not give the courts any authority to create a new right, which is what they did there in Lawrence v. Texas. They created a new right to sodomy. Human beings have a right to sodomy, is what that opinion, wicked opinion, says. But that's not what the Ninth Amendment permits them to do, and therefore they should have all been impeached by a Congress that was doing its duty according to its own oath before Almighty God fulfill its duty in the Constitution to check judicial tyranny in our land. So that's the Ninth Amendment. Very important to understand, because our government today obviously is violating this on an ongoing basis and creating new rights that do not exist and have never existed in English common law or in American common law. Then we come to the Tenth Amendment, the final amendment of the Bill of Rights. And it says that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. In other words, it's saying the only powers that the federal government have are the specific powers that we, the people, have delegated to them by the Constitution. If they don't have the power to do something according to the Constitution or the subsequent amendments, they don't have any power to do it at all. Oh, you go to Article 1, Section 8, if you want to see the powers that we, the people, by our Constitution, have granted to the federal government. And you'll see in that list there, it's very limited. 18 things that they can do. Nothing off that list are they permitted to do. Such things as the whole Department of Education is unconstitutional because they're not given permission in Article 1, Section 8 to spend one penny whatsoever on educating anybody, whether higher levels of education or elementary. No education spending is permitted. It's a violation of the Constitution, the entire education department, a violation of the Tenth Amendment.
Well, of course, the whole idea is the federal government wants to standardize education and create mediocrity. Mm-hmm. The federal government wants to be able to control what the children are taught, and turn them against God, and turn them against America, and make them believe that what we need is a one-world government, a government that can provide for you from the cradle to the grave. Of course, that will mean the end of all freedom as we know it. Well, David, go ahead, pick it up from there. Go ahead, David. David, are you there? David,
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tieri. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
For the break, is designed that the states would be a check against a monopoly power on the part of the federal government. If you read the Federalist Papers, number 45 spells this out very clearly. Federal government has very limited, delegated, enumerated powers. The state governments have wide-ranging powers, and the states were really designed to be the ones who handled all the issues of life, liberty, property. All of those things would be done in the states. Federal government only had a very narrow range of issues that it dealt with, primarily how we would interact with other nations in that kind of foreign policy issue, war if we were invaded, or if there were insurrection, if those sort of things. that needed to be handled on a federal level. Everything else was to be handled on the state level, because they knew on the state level a monopoly could never be developed. You have, well, originally 13 states. If you don't like the laws of the state of Rhode Island, you can move to Massachusetts. If you don't like the laws there, you can move to Virginia. You know, you have a choice regarding which state you reside in, but you don't have any choice regarding which country you reside in. Much harder to leave one country and emigrate to another than to leave one state and move into another state. And so they knew that the states, therefore, to some degree, they've got to sell the government and what they're doing to the people, because the people have a choice with their feet. Like here in the state of Maryland, there's all kinds of onerous and bureaucratic regulations of businesses, and the result is there's a flight of many businesses out of the state of Maryland. Like, hey, I've read articles by people who used to do business in Maryland. They said, forget it, we left for Delaware, we left for wherever, someplace that was friendlier to their business. Well, you can do that from state to state, but if the federal government has that kind of manipulative power, coercion, and bureaucratic control, you have nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. And that's exactly the sort of situation we're in today, because the federal government has been allowed, and there are people who've done this, has been allowed to expand its powers almost without limit. Almost without limit, because I say that because basically they create a law that's in violation of the Constitution. Take any one of them, like the Patriot Act. Create this law in violation of the Constitution, and who's going to hold them in check to it? The states? Well, hardly a squeak from the states of protest against the violations of the Fourth Amendment by the Patriot Act. And why? Because the states are bought off with the tax dollars that the federal government sucks out of the bloodstream of all the American workers. Then it gives back to the states with strings attached. The state will do the bidding of the federal government rather than do what is good for their own people. The states have been bought off, and it's a tragedy that this Tenth Amendment is largely ignored today.
I think a beautiful example of that would be what's going on in Texas, where the House there, the state House and the state Senate, massively voted, you know, certainly something 140 votes to 3 or 4 in the state legislature, and maybe only 2 or 3 votes in the Senate, you know, against legislation that was going to block construction of the NAFTA highway, or the NAFTA highway in the state of Texas, block it for 2 years. And what happens? Is the federal government saying, well, you have a right to do that? They're saying, no, you don't have a right to do that. We're going to withhold all highway funds and punish you in other ways. Now, you may represent the people, and the people may not want the highway, and the state legislature may not want the highway, but the federal government wants the highway, because we want, of course, to do away with the sovereignty of our states and create this North American Union. So we're going to punish you for voting against what we want. Think of the frightening implications of that, ladies and gentlemen. Think of that. This is done over and over again. The same thing is happening with the national ID card, where they want your driver's license to become a national identification card with an RFID chip in it, and so everybody can be registered and tracked electronically. And some of the states are saying, we don't want to do that, and so the federal government threatens them. Is this really what freedom's all about? Sure sounds more like fascism to me. But, you know, ladies and gentlemen, if you value freedom, you've got to learn the Constitution, and then you've got to help us get the information out. There really are people who have a different agenda, who really want an all-powerful federal government, because they think they're a lot smarter than we are. They think that the people should simply accept whatever they're told. They really want a feudalistic system under a new ruling aristocracy. The people from the Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderbergers, Trilateral Commission, the people of great wealth think that they should be able to control us common people. How do you feel about that? Are you willing to give up your freedom for a mess of pottage? Well, David, you go ahead and pick up the story there.
And so that 10th Amendment, it needs to be resurrected, and people need to demand that their senators and congressmen rein in that unconstitutional power that's being exercised from Washington, D.C. against their states. And they need to rouse up the state's own legislators, because the state legislators could pass a bill, and I know some states have. I understand Colorado has passed basically a 10th Amendment resolution saying anything the federal government tries to require us to do as a state that is not a power that's been granted to them by the Constitution, we refuse to do anything about it. So the federal government's going to tell us about schools. No child left behind. This is what you got to do with your schools. We can say, wait a minute. Nothing in the Constitution has granted you any power to do anything about education whatsoever. Therefore, we thumb our nose at you, and we're not going to follow your regulations. Tough to do, but states can begin to force the issue and ultimately push the federal government back, if the people understand this, fire these senators and fire these congressmen, because they're not doing the will of we the people. They're violating the will of we the people as expressed very clearly in our contract with them, which is the U.S. Constitution.
And I think what's so important about resolutions of this sort, it begins to educate the people about what the Constitution was. We have, you know, several generations of young people who think that freedom and our rights come from government, who do not understand our, at least according to the American concept, our freedoms come from God. And there are people who would take away those freedoms because they have an intense hatred of God, they have an intense hatred of freedom, because they know where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty, and that's the last thing they want. They want a government that can regulate you and provide for you and control you from the cradle of the grave. Go ahead.
Well, that's the 10th Amendment, and so that wraps up the Bill of Rights, and it's very important to compare the Bill of Rights and contrast it with almost all of the succeeding amendments to the Constitution. There's another 17 amendments over the course of 200-some years, but most of those amendments, with a few exceptions, most of those amendments, instead of restricting the power of the federal government, expands the power of the federal government. It gives permission for the federal government basically to punch holes through and create gates and doors through that wall we talked about. If the body of the Constitution, the seven articles, is seen as a playing field, like a football field, well, the Bill of Rights, the first to ten amendments, is a high and supposedly impregnable wall around that playing field. Say, hey, you can't go out of bounds. We won't even let you go out of bounds. There's a wall right there. You try to go out of bounds, you're going to run into a brick wall. Well, sad to say, most of the subsequent amendments create all kinds of holes and doors and windows through that wall.
Hold that thought, David. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney. And David, I'd like you to get your webpage out, your telephone number, so people would know how they can get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution, and then tell them what the Institute is, about your programs, and about what you're trying to accomplish.
We're trying to teach people these basic principles of American law and government, what our founders' view of law was, and really, as you discover the details of it, it's a biblical worldview of law and government. They founded it upon the Christian principles and established a structure in order to fulfill God's law of protecting and defending the God-given rights of every single citizen in the land. And this is not a difficult program in order to communicate these truths to others. You don't have to be a legal expert or a historian to do that. We've put together what we call a host kit, because the person leading it is not actually teaching. We're putting in a series of DVDs, and Dr. John Eidsmo and 12 lectures walk through the same material we're walking through here on the air in those half-hour lectures, and a student notebook is provided that gives a detailed outline of each of those lectures so the students can follow along and add their own thoughts and notes. At the end of each chapter or each lecture is a series of test questions and discussion questions that help solidify the principles and the truths taught in each of those lectures. All of this is put together as a host kit, so the person leading it, and simply with a turnkey method, put together a group that will communicate these to a group of citizens and inspire them to go and teach this to others and others and others and spread as a grass fire across our country. You can purchase our host kit by going online. If you go to our web store, which is at iotconline.com, that stands for Institute on the Constitution, IOTConline.com, and click on the web store there, and on the second page there you'll see our host kit. Or if you want to call us toll-free and order a host kit, we invite you to do that. And our toll-free number to call is 866-730-9796. That toll-free number again is 866-730-9796. Dr. Stan, we're encouraged as across the country these classes are being taught. There was a class that just graduated last week in Central California, Ridgecrest, a town up in the mountains there, and other classes graduating at this time of year. And we held a class actually teaching state legislators here in Maryland during the legislative session that goes on from January to March. We taught delegates and senators the truths of what our Constitution really says, and it was eye-opening experience for many of them because they had never sat down and really studied the Constitution, never understood what our founders were really intending to do. And some of them were quite upset when they began to realize how far we are away from what our founders designed. And it's given them some thinking and some acting that's going to hopefully change things here in the state of Maryland as increasing number of legislators recognize that we are way out of bounds and the federal government is way out of bounds and needs to be reined in, and the state legislatures can begin to do something along those lines. And as we arouse the people in this state and across the United States, we can bring about a change to restore our constitutional republic that's been trampled upon by out-of-control federal judiciary, executive, and legislative branches.
Well,
we encourage people to get a host kit and start with your family, start with your group of friends, do it in your church. Begin educating people by using the host kit.
And I think it's a very important thing to do. Well, we're going to, just this evening, if anybody has a question specifically about what we've been talking about, why, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. This is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. And ordinarily, we don't take calls, but perhaps this evening, if you have a specific question about anything that Pastor David Whitney has been talking about, why, give us a call. Otherwise, David, just go ahead and pick up the story as we go on to the 11th and 12th Amendments.
So as we step away from the Bill of Rights, we see an expansion of power of government. The 11th Amendment, ratified 1798, was actually in response to a lawsuit against the state of Georgia, Chisholm v. Georgia, that was in 1793. What it was is an out-of-state resident, that is someone not a resident of the state of Georgia, Chisholm, had a contract with the state of Georgia. And he believed that the state of Georgia had violated the terms of his contract, and so he sued them. But, of course, the state of Georgia, in its own court system, was not about to allow him to sue them, so he had to appeal it up to the federal level and all the way up to the Supreme Court. And so the Supreme Court basically said, well, you can't do that. We're going to allow this man to sue the state of Georgia. And this amendment basically reversed that and says states may not be sued in federal court by citizens of another jurisdiction without that state's consent. Well, what state is going to consent to be sued by someone that they've broken, they've violated a contract with? Not likely. So here's an expansion of powers that allows states the ability to freely violate any contract that they form with someone who is not a citizen of their states. And I don't think that's a good thing. States should be held to the commitments they make, the contracts they enter, just as much as we individuals ought to be held to the contracts that we enter into. Nonetheless, there in 1798, this amendment passed. It's interesting to note what the state of Georgia did. It shows, although I don't agree with their position, their reaction to the Supreme Court's decision to enforce this lawsuit against them was very telling as to how the states viewed the federal government. They believed, I don't think correctly, but they believed that the federal government was violating their powers as a state. And so the state basically said, let anybody from the federal government come down here and try to enforce that opinion of the Supreme Court that that would fine us for violating this contract. Let them send somebody down here, and when they cross the state line, we will hang them. That's right. They threatened to hang anybody from the federal government that came down to the state of Georgia trying to enforce the opinion of the Supreme Court.
Well, of course, you know, this might be a debatable issue. The question is, should the state be sovereign? And I think it should, especially if it's dealing with other people. But then I think that the state also should act in a moral fashion. In other words, I don't believe the federal government should tell the state what to do. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I certainly don't think that the state government should enter into a contract and then violate it, because that is, of course, a violation of integrity. And
right.
What we need is integrity and morality. Well, right now we've got Mike calling us from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. So, Mike, did you have a question about the Constitution?
I did. You know, with the H.R. 1592 that has just passed the House on the local law enforcement on hate crimes legislation, here we have a federal Congress telling us that our local law enforcement, which I believe according to the Constitution is the sheriff,
mm-hmm.
Is to impose a federal law in the state. The Ninth, if I'm not mistaken, the Ninth Amendment of the Constitution reserves anything not declared in the Constitution, reserves it to the right of the people.
No, that's the Tenth Amendment.
Yes.
And then the Tenth Amendment reserves it to the state.
Well, the Tenth actually reserves it to the state or the people. The Ninth Amendment deals with any unenumerated rights. Just because they're not enumerated in the Constitution doesn't deny or disparage those rights retained by the people. But the Tenth says that, yes, if the power was not specifically granted by we the people, delegated enumerated powers to the federal government, it does not have the power to act in those ways. And you're absolutely right. H.R. 1592 is unconstitutional. On its face, it's unconstitutional. Furthermore, hate crimes are ridiculous. There's
you're
no
right.
such thing as, or there should be no such thing as criminalizing someone's thoughts. It's their actions, it's their behavior alone that should indicate criminal activity deserving of punishment, not their thoughts, which is what the hate crimes legislation is all about.
You're absolutely right, Mike. That what we need to do is get people to understand that the federal government really is made up of terrorists. The definition of terrorism, according to our recent legislation, terrorists are those who would change our form of government. And that means that the people who voted for that legislation and most other legislation are terrorists and should be dealt with accordingly. And what I'm saying is we've got to educate the people. We've got to educate the legislators, too. Hey, anything else you want to say before we let you go?
Yes, I wanted to ask a question alongside that, using that as a springboard. We want to keep getting back to the Constitution, but that Constitution is a federal Constitution.
You're right.
What about the states in which they are, where they have mired the line between the state and the Fed, and you have states that are just as disobedient to the laws of liberty as the federal?
All right. David, you go ahead and pick
yes, that up. What we need to do is to train the people in each state about their state constitution and what their state constitution limits their state government in doing. And we here in Maryland for the first time have done a Maryland state constitution and put a class together that we're going to offer on an ongoing basis. And I've spoken with a friend in California who's interested in putting together a similar course for the California Constitution. We're looking for 48 other people who would take their state constitution, teach a course about it, and we're willing to help them put together those details and help them craft a course that could help teach the limits that are set by each state constitution on their state, because most state legislators don't know the Constitution. In fact, I testified for a particular piece of legislation in our state legislature this term. After I testified and walked out, two legislators came out to talk with me, and I had quoted our Maryland state constitution in my testimony and emphasized that this bill was according to the Constitution and so on. And one of the legislators said to me, David, where can I get a copy of the Maryland state constitution?
This is a member of the state.
Here's
Maryland
a member,
state
member of the legislature.
To their state secretary.
He never had seen a copy of it. I said, here, take mine. I'll get another copy elsewhere, but take mine. And that's what happens. Most state legislators never study their state constitution. Therefore, they're violating their oath of office without even knowing it. And they get away with doing that because the people who elect them do not ask them a basic question. Have you studied the state constitution of our state? Do you know it? Are you really, truly willing to abide by it? Can you quote me sections of it that indicate you know it better than I do? And that, of course, takes an educated citizenry who knows their state constitution well enough to hold their elected officials accountable.
Well, Mike,
we're going to have to let you go.
Oh, I'm
thank
sorry.
You very much.
Thank
so
you.
Let's go to Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Mike, did you have a question?
Well, I want to ask Pastor Whitney, what's his take on the 16th Amendment?
That's an excellent question. And first of all, the 16th Amendment was not designed to be a tax upon the citizens. It was designed to be a tax upon corporations and foreigners who were doing work in the United States. We know that because we have Supreme Court decisions following the ratification, the questionable ratification, by the way, of the 16th Amendment. If you know of the book that The Law That Never Was,
right,
that details that the 16th Amendment, the details appear that it was not properly ratified in the states at all. But even if you were to say, okay, it was properly ratified, the Supreme Court said that, and this is after the supposed ratification, that the 16th Amendment did not add any new taxing powers to the federal government. That's very important because the federal government is already restricted by the Constitution that no capitation tax is permitted by the federal government. That is, a capitation tax is a tax on the head. That is a tax directly on the individual. Before this unconstitutional system was instituted, the federal government would send a tax bill not to the citizen, not April 15th and so on. The tax bill would go to the state. Each of the 50 states would receive a tax bill proportionate to their census, as the last census, as to how many people they had in their state. And the states then would determine how they were going to raise that money by whatever means they chose of taxation within their state to pay their federal tax bill. The feds never tax the individual because that is a capitation tax, which is prohibited by the Constitution.
So basically we have a problem, Mike, and that is that we have an enforcement of a law that is illegal. However, my suggestion is to people is to pay your taxes and then take your time rather than trying to fight the government that way. Try to do something they fear even more, and that is to educate the people about the fact that there is a ruling aristocracy who are frankly lawbreakers who are using the power of government to extract money from the people that they are using to advance their program, which is to bring about a world government, a new world religion, and, of course, with a new world leader. And so our job is to point out that they are collecting money illegally. They have a tremendous amount of money that they waste, and that they are using that money to destroy our freedom. Hey, thanks very much for calling, Mike. Anything else you want to say?
That's it, thanks.
Okay, fine. Go ahead, David.
I appreciate the fact that one presidential candidate understands that, Ron Paul.
He's right.
Asking debate here. I think it was last week, Thursday or something of last week, that, you know, what would he do about taxation? He said he'd abolish the IRS on his first day of office because he understands the IRS is doing something unconstitutional. They're breaking the law. And the president could do that because he has power over that. I applaud him as a constitutional candidate so far, the only one I've heard that really understands the Constitution or is willing to abide by the terms of the Constitution. In the presidential race to date, at least.
Amen to that. Well, certainly, I think it's so vitally important that people go to Ron Paul's website, pull down these little short statements that he makes, but they're very profound. I always learn a great deal from the wisdom of Congressman Ron Paul, and one of the things he said, first of all, the first day he'd get rid of the IRS, and then he'd do away with the inflation tax.
Yes.
And as he said, the inflation tax is simply a vehicle by which they just tax you by inflation, destroying the value of your currency. And what we need to do is get back to a currency backed by gold and silver so they can't produce in perpetual inflation. And every year take away another 3 or 4% or 5%, or as it is at the present time, 10% of the value you've spent your whole life working for through inflation as they move to impoverish our people and, of course, restrict our freedom. We've got a couple of minutes to wrap things up, David.
Well, let's mention at least the 12th Amendment in the wrap-up time here. This dealt with the Electoral College, the way we elect our president, Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution. And it provided that electors should vote separately for president and vice president. That is, up until 1804, when the 12th Amendment was ratified, the two top people in the campaign for president would wind up taking the role of president and then vice president. And this 12th Amendment changed that in 1804, such that you're voting for a ticket of president and vice president rather than voting just for one person for president, and the winner becomes president, and the person taking second place then would become vice president under the old system. This seems like a wise change the 12th Amendment brought about.
All right, we're going to be back here, and it goes one more time. Let's get your telephone number out there.
It's 866-730-9796.
Okay, thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, I guess this evening is David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. We certainly support the Institute of the Constitution. They support Radio Liberty as well. David, you got about 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
And when we look at the 12th Amendment, that's one of the few that I would say, yeah, that seems to be a good thing. There's no major objection to that. But when we come to the 13th Amendment, some 61 years later, we start to have enormous problems with the expansion of the powers of our federal government. The 13th Amendment basically abolished slavery, and it abolished slavery towards the end of that war to prevent Southern independence, perhaps is the best term for it, because the Southern states, the Confederate states, basically were doing what we had done from England. That is, they declared independence, said, you're no longer protecting our God-given rights, therefore we're going to form our own government, which the Declaration of Independence says that any people have the right to do that. However, President Lincoln said, you cannot leave this Union except in a body bag. And he went ahead to foment the bloodiest war that has ever taken place in our land, 600,000 killed, and completely unnecessary. By the way, the war had nothing to do with the issue of slavery. As he himself admitted, read his first inaugural address, he wasn't going to touch slavery. In fact, he made a statement that could he preserve the Union without freeing one slave, he would do exactly that. And so we've been sold the idea that the war to prevent Southern independence was really about slavery. It was not. It was about expanding the power of federal government over the states. And this one particular issue was one among many of whether a state could choose to be slave or free. The war, I believe, is completely unnecessary. Even if you wanted to move ahead to abolish slavery, all other nations in the world, England, for example, that abolished slavery, they didn't do so by a bloody war. This was an evil thing, and Lincoln accomplished an expansion of the federal government, 13th Amendment being one example of it, and it abolished slavery in all of the states. However, the early courts ruled that it did not abolish the other forms of segregation or discrimination. It just abolished slavery. However, in time, that has been turned around. 1968 civil rights cases basically said the 13th Amendment also abolished the badges and incidents of slavery, and this was an enormous expansion of the power of federal government over the states, and I believe in complete contradiction to what our founders believed. Life, liberty, property, these were issues to be dealt with in the states at the state level, not the federal government level interfering with the states.
Hold that thought. We're out of time. Good night. God bless.
God bless you, Doc.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoy our monthly conferences with Pastor David Whitney, because I think it's so vitally important that you understand our Constitution and you are able to discuss it intelligently, understanding that liberty and limited government are synonymous, that tyranny and total government are synonymous. There really are people who want to move us towards total government because they want a dictatorship in America, and they believe that they, of course, are destined to rule the world. If you haven't, of course, read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or seen the DVD, you need to get those, I think, and then, of course, my talk on Forbidden Secret. It will give you tremendous insight into what is really going on throughout the world today. Why are some of our leaders intent upon going to war with Iran? The Iranian people don't want to go to war with America. The American people don't want to go to war with Iran. But you see, it doesn't matter how the people feel. There is another agenda, and it ties into the forbidden secret. So we do hope many of you want to think seriously about getting the DVD by that title. That's the forbidden secret. And we have it at the present time in DVD format. We hope very soon to have it in video. And then, of course, to put things into even clearer perspective, the DVD put forward by Chris Pinto, and this is an award-winning DVD. It got the Best Documentary of the Year from the New York Film Festival last year, and The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. We'll give you insight into the secret societies that existed in America in the 1600s, and, of course, the forces that were at work. And the dualism, of course, one force being the Christian influence and the other, of course, being the occult influence of the secret societies that had come down through antiquity. The Americans, the Christians, wanted a Christian nation where men could be free. The occultists wanted an occult nation where one day the power of this nation, the military and financial power, would be utilized to bring about the Novo Ordo Seclorum. That slogan on the back of the dollar bill, which was originally put on the back of the Great Seal of the United States back in 1782, because that has always been part of the secret destiny of America. And then, of course, you want to get the DVD, Riddles in Stone. You want to get the DVDs on They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, 4-hour, 10-hour version. You need to have the background of this information. You're not going to get elsewhere. We have some great books on satanic crimes, William H. Kennedy's book. We have another book called Programmed to Kill by David McGowan, and we're going to be putting together a 4-tape set, my interviews with William Kennedy and David McGowan, called Satanic Crimes. Fascinating material. Begin to introduce you to the practical application of so much of what we talked today, and how these dark forces permeate every aspect of our lives. If you've not yet seen the DVD, The Mysteries of the Bohemian Grove, by Alex Jones, actually, but we have a 4-tape set on the Bohemian Grove. What do you know about this strange organization that meets up in the Santa Rosa area of California every year, and where the leaders of the United States, indeed leaders throughout the world, run around in the woods without clothing on? I mean, what is this all about? You'll certainly want to get our 4-tape set. You want to get to the Mysteries of the Bohemian Grove by Alex Jones, and then if you'd like, of course, we can send you along a couple of pages, simply the opening, I think it's a volume 4 of a privately circulated book put out by the Bohemian Grove, where they talk about how they worship the owl. Worship the owl? The owl of Moloch, of course, a 40-foot cement owl. They know what they're doing, because this goes back to pagan practices. They just don't want you to know. The books, The Gods Who Walk Among Us, are a spiritual warfare, little books, but they give you tremendous insight into what's going on. So please remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. It happened to be my views and the views of our guests. And for this hour, we're going to have with us David Sibley of Ready Reserve Foods. And David, of course, is concerned about what's happening from the food supply point of view. He's been in the business of providing dehydrated foods to people for how many years have you been out of the business, David?
We're in our 35th year now.
You're in 35th year. Gee, that sort of begins to date you. How did you get into this business?
Well, it's a long story. As owner of the business, I'm in my 10th year. But Ready Reserve has been in constant operations since 1972.
Okay, so you actually you've only been then controlling the business for about 10 years.
But I've been in aligned with the business for 20.
Okay, fine. All right, fine. So were you actually in Ready Reserve before that same business?
Pardon me?
Were you actually in this? Were you actually with Ready Reserve or with another company?
Well, as a dealer with Ready Reserve, I eventually just purchased the company.
Well, that was probably a pretty smart move, right before Y2K, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And that was that certainly was there was tremendous demand for all that sort of thing. And then after Y2K, people sort of forgot about that. Nothing bad happened. And although I think a lot of people did a very wise thing, I think they made preparations. But an awful lot of people didn't make preparations, but some people did. But now, of course, I think we're facing very real problems once again. And a lot of people are saying, oh, well, I've heard this all before, but, you know, we're always going to be able to get food. And what's your response when people say, oh, well, I'll wait till something really happens?
You're too late. If by the time something happens that is, shall we say, enough to where the majority of people would begin to feel that the food supply is threatened, the stores are cleaned out, we can't supply, and it's all over.
Well, of course, Katie Couric was going to be talking on the what's happening to the bees. Was that program tonight?
That was actually last night, and it was very well done, but it was a very soft. They didn't sound the alarm too loud. Even though they did raise some serious concerns. They had some very involved people. A gentleman named Pettis from the U.S. Department of Agriculture that's spearheading the government's effort on what's going wrong with the bees. And according to what he was saying in the article, they haven't got a clue. And what bothered me the most was their demeanor. Doesn't appear to be much of a sense of urgency on their part. I mean, to me, I know that we're one crop cycle, about 45 to 50 days away from starvation. This just-in-time system that we have of food supply depends on every crop coming in, every crop. And there is very little food warehoused from time to time.
Because we used to have tremendous supplies. We used to have tremendous supplies of corn and wheat. But my understanding is that we're down with the lowest level we've been since about 1972. Have you heard that?
Yes, that's very true. We are the lowest level. And back in 72, the price of wheat got tremendously high, upwards of $20 a bushel, on fears of short supply. That mindset hasn't... a lot has happened since 1972. In 35 years, people's outlook the world has changed. An entire generation has come along that has never seen anything bad happen, and nothing, as a friend of mine calls it, to have... see the things working in reverse. Everything has always had a somewhat pleasant outcome.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with David Sibley. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking about the program that they had this with Katie Kirk, talking about the honeybees. And for those of you who don't know why, suddenly the honeybees seem to be getting lost and not coming back to the hives. And of course, in certain parts of the country, people lost up to 90% of their bees. Now, in some areas, not too bad. In certain, I know you spent some time with the beekeepers there in Southern California, and they're not really having the problem so much, are they?
As of late, I have not interacted with them. I'm going to have to go back and check. But I did my own little, tonight before the show, this evening, when I got home from work, I went for a bike ride. Along a path that I've taken in the past, where I've run into bees. There we go by honeysuckle bushes and other flowering plants. I didn't see one bee. I might have been a little late in the day. The bees may have gone home for the evening. It wasn't evening yet, though. But I was stunned. We can recall seeing bees there that late in the afternoon. So I think it's affecting everything. And what's really odd is, nothing concrete when it comes to the cause. There are the theories that are abounding about the bee problem. And we have to let the listeners know that about a third of the food that you eat has been pollinated in the courtesy of a bee. And without them, things could get real short. You could get real hungry.
All right, of course, you're busy talking about the citrus crops, you're talking about almonds, you're talking, what about the field crops? What about things like carrots and corn and wheat and things of that sort? Or are they primarily pollinated by, simply by the wind?
Yes, the corn and most of the grains are pollinated by the wind. It's basically the rule of thumb, if it has a flower, it's trying to attract a pollinator, a bee, a bumblebee, a hummingbird, or something that will transfer the pollen and cause the fruit to spawn.
And, of course, you have to have the pollination to actually get the fruit to form. And so there will be some very real problems if this process continues. And apparently it isn't just here in the United States. The honeybees are disappearing all across the world, and our government says, oh, shucks, we have no idea why this is happening. But certainly they suggest maybe it's some of the new genetically modified food, or some of the food that has pesticides in it that's poisoning the bees, or new fertilizers. Or what have you found out, David? When we get back here, I want you to tell us what you found out about the bee problem. Well, this is Dr. Stan. David, what have you found out about the bees? About why are the bees are disappearing?
There's no firm cause. There's a lot of strong indicators in some areas. The genetically modified crop thing is coming, getting a little stronger, shall we say, billing now, that they're finding it residues from genetically modified crops are showing up in pollens and things that the bees interact with. I still hold out for the one theory that I read some time ago about the new class of pesticides that are out there. They're nicotine-based, and they're coming up systemically in the plant, and they're mixing with other commonly more used insecticides and increasing the strength of the effect by a thousandfold. The EPA knew that these insecticides by themselves had a minor effect on the bee's ability to create memory. And that bee has to create a memory. It has to home. It has to learn how to get back to the hive. And it only lives a short period of time, so it has to get a lot of work done and be as busy as a bee in a very short period of time. Well, now this pesticide, this nicotine-based pesticide, is coming up, mixing with other stuff, and is increasing the effect, the strength, the potency on these bees' ability to make memory. And it's basically making bees appear to be retarded. That's what I lean toward. And the stuff that I glean from all the information out there that's out about what's causing this problem.
All right, so we really don't know. Some people think it may be the pesticides, and certainly they actually put something called BT into corn and other products, and of course, so that every kernel of corn, every leaf of corn, every bit of pollen from the corn has this BT pesticide in it. Is that what it is? Certainly we know that it has actually had an impact on moths and butterflies, and certainly had a profound impact on other insects. We know it kills caterpillars. So why wouldn't it kill bees? Quite frankly, no one knows, and I suspect the government isn't too really concerned about that. Oh, they'll profess to be, but remember, the major thrust of American foreign policy is population control throughout the world. And they really do believe that there are too many people in the world, and there are too many people in the United States. And they even put out a report back in 1974 called the National Security Study Memorandum 200, where they laid out a massive plan and sort of a mind count for world population control. And every year we appropriate about $400 million for worldwide population control, and we fund all sorts of macabre things that are killing people and encouraging abortions and encouraging various contraceptives, mandatory contraception throughout the world. It's all being funded from the United States, but after all, if we have a right to control population throughout the world and the right of a woman to have a child, that we're giving them vaccines in the name of course, protecting them from tetanus, that are actually creating miscarriages and abortions, and this is rather standard. It's been used in Thailand, we know, and in the Philippines, and in Kenya, I suspect most other developed countries. Oh, we're here from the West, we are so benevolent. We're going to give free tetanus shots, but only to childbearing women, of course. And then, of course, the women begin having abortions, and they cannot carry a child to pregnancy. Well, but if we can do that throughout the world, I mean, why should we complain when, of course, they do similar things here in America? Do we have a right to complain? If you're not involved in what's going on, then you become part of the problem. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But we suddenly have the honeybee problem. And then, of course, we have something called the wheat rust. And that is some sort of a fungus that gets onto the wheat plants, and certainly it's sweeping throughout Africa and destroying the wheat crops there. And do you know if that involves corn or any other product, or is it primarily wheat?
David? Just basically rust and, wheat. I have not heard of any diseases attacking corns, any of the other grains yet. I've watched this on a daily basis because it affects my industry, and it's a fear, again, like I said earlier. Everything, this whole world is one crop cycle away from mass starvation. You couple the problems we're having with pollination, with the rust. Now you place this drought, this global drought, Australia, Africa, Europe, California. I mean, look at Stan where we live. We both live here in California. The water problem. I did notice today on my little bike ride down near the riverbed and in some of the just standalone fields, the fields are already summer brown, and it's spring isn't basically half over. They never got green. And I'm wondering if the drought or this continued drought and all this weather change isn't affecting the bees.
I really don't know. Well, we do know that, of course, there's a terrible problem over in Australia as far as the wheat crop is concerned because, of course, of the drought there. And certainly, Australia's been a big exporter of wheat to other countries. And I think China's been buying a lot of wheat from them. But will they be able to continue doing that, especially, of course, if Australia doesn't have wheat to export and Australia will look after its own country first? And, of course, we have something called here in the Central California a brown moth. Actually, we got it from Australia, but it comes in and destroys the fruit crop. And so they're going to begin to isolate the coastal area where I live to try to keep this brown moth from getting, and spreading across the agriculture here in California. And then, of course, we've got all these genetically modified rice, the rice crops. What's happening to this genetically modified rice? Why is not this is not cleared for human consumption? And has it really contaminated a lot of the rice crop here in California?
Well, last time I got any what a new information on this, it's like the California rice crop is almost like my daughter says, got cooties. Nobody wants to touch it right now. The other states, big producing states like Arkansas, I lean on Arkansas because I do buy a lot of rice from Arkansas. They're adamant that they do not use these genetically modified crops in or production in rice.
But certainly this is not clear for human consumption, and as a result of this, many other countries will not buy rice from the United States, or at least rice from California, because what has happened is, of course, they planted their genetically modified rice, and then, of course, the pollen has spread, the wind has spread the pollen, and so much of the rice crop in California has been contaminated and made it certainly unfit for human consumption. Are there any studies? Do we know why it is dangerous for human beings, or is it just it hasn't been studied?
That I do not know, sir.
Well, maybe somebody out there in the audience does. If you know anything about it, why give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But there seem to be so many things coming together just at this time in history, any time, really much more than I can remember at any time in the past. But go ahead, David. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, that's all right. The threats. Yes, Dr. Stan, it's unbelievable. The threats to just your daily substance now are just off the charts. You can't even keep track of them. I spend quite a bit of time every day looking for anything new that threatens the food supply, and it's just every day, it seems like there's just, it's more and more and bigger and bigger. And the end result of all of this, of any or all of this, is food in short supply. And the mindset of today is, don't worry, there'll always be food. Well, guess what? One of these little things take root, or it may have already been set in motion. The bee problem. Come this fall, we're not going to know until it's harvest time. And then again, when Katie Couric starts telling you that food's in short supply, it will be in short supply because everyone's going to run out and start stockpiling food. There's not enough food available, even right now under normal circumstances, for people to start, shall we say, overbuying or stocking food. If under normal circumstances, everybody just bought 10% more food, or call it 8%. So at the end of a year, you would have stockpiled an extra year's worth of food. The system could not handle it. It would probably be out of food within about 3 or 4 months. It's just this steady, predictable cadence that they supply. If there's a panic or something go wrong, they can't supply, they can't keep up. It's like a gas shortage. Once the refineries get behind, they can't keep up, because of the limited refining capability that we're in now. We're seeing that now with the gas prices. Refineries are hampered. They're running at full capacity most of the time. And a couple big ones have production problems. And demand far outstrips supply at the worst time of year, which is the summer driving season. So it's the same thing holds true with the food. And the food production is predictable. It's there is no boo-boo factor. There's nothing to fall back on when it comes to supplies, unless everybody has a store of food in their home to get them by, just like my grandparents did, and I'm sure your parents did, Doctor. Everybody stored food away for hard times, winters. I remember helping my grandmother can grapes, grape jelly and stuff. I was a little guy, and I remember that. To this day, I still remember how it was done, why she did it, and the whole demeanor that she had about storing food away. But then again, they had gone through a depression, too.
Yeah, of course, I remember my mother used to put up the tomatoes, and she used to put up all these things, the chili sauce, and there were so many things that were done in those days. a lot of people have forgotten how to do it because, of course, we've never seen a shortage during most of our lifetime. Well, we've got Mike calling in here with a question. Mike, did you have a question?
Well, more of a comment. I've got an angle on this whole thing. This is possibly a fabricated crisis. I'm not denying that bees are missing or anything like that. But I'd like to refer back to the energy crisis, the so-called crisis we had not long ago, four or five years ago, where all across the state they gave us rolling brownouts and told us that we had a problem. And meanwhile, there was all this whirlwind legislation running through the California legislature. And in the end of it all, once the legislature was done with all their mess, the brownouts amazingly ended, and Enron made off with the money. They did the same thing with Y2K. But right now, we have a looming food crisis, and simultaneously, we have Codex Alimentarius bearing down on us.
All right, fine. Well,
are we as stupid as we look?
Well, I think that certainly some of these problems are very real, but they're man-made, and maybe they were made on purpose. Certainly, many of the genetically modified foods are very, very dangerous. We know that some of the genetically modified potatoes, at least in animals, produced a lot of deaths among the animals. We know that genetically modified corn, at least when fed to pigs, actually led to infertility of the pigs. We know that when we begin to modify God's plan, sometimes we can open Pandora's box because we really don't understand the full implications of what we're doing, and we should have never released any of the genetically modified crops onto the world's population, and yet that's exactly what we've done. But then, of course, then we see the droughts. Now, certainly, we know that they can create storms and droughts. Are these man-made storms and droughts, or are these simply acts of God? If anybody doubts that we can make storms and droughts, we have an article written by Zygmunt Brzezinski. It's actually a note at the bottom of one of his book, Between Two Ages, where he talks about, the book is written in 1970, and he's talking about the future, and he said, by the year 2018, so-and-so, and he's referring to somebody else saying, we'll be able to create chronic diseases to attack the enemy with. And then, of course, we'll be able to create storms and droughts. So now we're seeing droughts throughout the world. And, of course, they're going to try to attribute it to global warming. But on the other hand, certainly we've had droughts before. It's just the strength that all of these things are coming together along with the honeybees. I don't know what to make out of it, Mike, but I do know that going along with the potential for a massive expansion of the conflict in the Middle East, and simply for the fact that we could very well see the price of oil going up to $100 a barrel. With that, of course, the price of diesel would go up. With that, of course, the price of farming would go up. Right now, we're, of course, seeing the price of corn going up because the government, in its wisdom, has said, oh, no, we're gonna solve the oil problem and the oil shortage and get ourselves energy independent by using ethanol. And, of course, as a result, now we're producing mass amounts of ethanol. We have to subsidize it because it's not financially feasible. But with that, now we've increased the price of meat and of poultry and of milk and of eggs. And we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is just Dr. Stan back here. David, what would your response be, and how would you respond to Mike's concerns?
It could very well be. It could actually be an act of terrorism. No one knows. But the bottom line is the end result is still the same. You go without. This is why I implore your listeners to begin stockpiling food. I'm in the dehydrated foods business. I want to sell you food. Because my food stores, without refrigeration, where canned foods or normal wet pack foods that you buy at the store aren't designed to have a long shelf life. But either way, the end result is still the same. Very few people are prepared to weather out a storm that is approaching, or may already be here, and we may not even be aware of it yet. The die may have been cast for a crop failure because of the bees and the drought this fall. And when it finally becomes in the mainstream, the public knowledge, which Monday night, Katie Couric and a little special that they did on the bees, they may be letting the cat out of the bag already. And
because, you know, all sorts of things are happening. This thing with the melamine, which is a glutine product that they got into the pet food, and they talk about thousands of animals dying or getting ill. We don't know whether thousands of animals have died or got ill. We don't have any statistics on it, but we are opening our borders to food from communist China and countries that hate us. Should we be surprised that some of that food would be contaminated and harmful, not only to animals, but maybe even to human beings? Now we find that some of the food was got into the chickens, and some of it got into hogs, and some of that has been butchered and out in the market. What impact will that have on human beings? We don't know. But it is interesting that nothing like this has ever, in my knowledge, has ever happened before. Mike, did you want anything else to say before we let you go?
Well, just one thing. Everybody's quoting Einstein and his big statement about 4 or 5 years would be all that was left if the bees were gone. And I wonder if somebody's picking up on his research. But,
well, actually, there's a big controversy about whether he even said that at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
But about what Dr. Stan was saying about foreign foods, less than 0.75% of the foods that come into this country are inspected by the Food and Drug Administration.
What a wonderful means of killing off a lot of Americans, by our enemies or maybe even by our own government, importing poisonous foods, and then they could say, oh, sex, it wasn't our fault. And then, of course, we had the spinach conspiracy. Remember about 3 months ago with the E. coli, spinach?
Oh,
and
yeah.
You know this was actually engineered because this is not the first time there's ever been some contamination of the food supply. I think 2 or 3 people at the most died. But hammering away at it night after night after night after night after night after night after night, focusing our attention on it till everybody, of course, is scared to death to eat spinach. And then there was another contaminated food at that time. You notice how they manipulate our attitudes and focus our attention on certain issues, and that is the issue for this week. So, Mike, you may be right. We may be being totally manipulated. Time alone is going to tell.
One last thing. You know, we've been conditioned all our lives to believe that our government has our best interests at heart when it doesn't. Why did the framers of the Constitution insist on the chains placed on the federal government? If they knew what would happen. Those chains have been broken, and this is what we've got.
Well, our founding fathers believed that men were inherently evil and corrupt, and that is why you could never trust men with power. And if you couldn't trust certainly, the average individual to act responsibly, how could you possibly trust the people who were in positions of power in government to act responsibly? And so their whole concept of our government, different than any other government, was to restrict the power of government so men could be free. And, of course, they were really going back to some of the writings and teachings of John Locke, who in the 1600s had written that government governs best, that governs the least. And that is, of course, what freedom is about. Isn't it a shame we never teach that to our children in our schools today? Now, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Mike, have anything else to say?
That's it, thanks.
Good night. God bless. Okay, fine. Well, if you're out there and you have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And certainly, this is an important subject. I think people have to start asking themselves, could it possibly be that here in the land of plenty, they said there could be shortages that could affect me? Well, this is Dr. Standback here. And David, would you like to get your web page out or your telephone number?
Okay. You could visit us on the web at readyreservefoods.com. And our phone number is 800-453-2202.
All right, fine. Of course, we do. If you're interested in knowing more about Ready Reserve Foods, you can also give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But really, I think it's important that people begin thinking about what's going on today. I mean, where would you get your water from if suddenly there was they turned off the water supply or it got somehow contaminated? I mean, do you have any barrels of water? Do you have a means of getting your water out of the barrels? I mean, you got to have some sort of a pump. It's pretty hard to reach down to the little opening there and get the water out. But you need to think about these things ahead of time. What are you going to do for light? What about salt? What about sugar? What about the staples? I mean, we have a book, Making the Best of Basics. It's a book that's been around for a long time. What do you do with wheat? You got wheat, but I mean, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to make it edible? How do you bake bread if you don't have any yeast? And the other things are the ways to do it. And, of course, there are. These were known to our founders and to our relatives in generations past. I think making the best of basics is certainly a primer for anybody who is really interested in knowing what to do should the unthinkable happen. Well, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're here in the Central Coast of California, maybe you disagree. Maybe you think there's absolutely nothing to worry about. Everything's going to be fine, and of course the really important thing is, will the Warriors, be able to win the NBA? Is it possible that the Giants might get the pennant this year? And what about Roger Clemens? I think he's going to make something like $30 or $40 million, for pitching this season. Isn't that amazing? And so we worry ourselves with all sorts of really unimportant things, when some of the most significant and exciting things in the world are taking place today, and these are the things we should really be talking about. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment, and we'll be talking to James, who is calling us from Michigan. So just a moment more, and we'll be picking up all of our stations, and we'll welcome your other calls here at Radio Liberty at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here at 464-8295 in the Central Coast. Our guest this evening is David Sibley, who knows a lot more about dehydrated food and that sort of thing than I do, because he's been at this business for a long time. We've got James calling from Michigan, and he has a question. Hi, James. How are you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Doing just fine. What part of Michigan are you from?
From Lapeer, Michigan. It's approximately right in the middle of the Mitt.
All right. Are you close to Flint? How are you hearing us? Are you hearing us on shortwave internet or our station in Flint?
600 a.m. 600
all right.
a.m.
All right. That's, of course, a good, great station there in Flint, Michigan. Okay.
Yeah, it's my first time ever hearing the show. Wow. What a great show.
Everything I'm
into, man. I mean, the whole show. Just wow. Everything. Just great.
All right. Fine. Well, I hope we'll get you hooked and you'll be listening, because it's getting pretty late back there. But we're good to have you with us. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah. I was just wondering, I know you're in the business of doing the dehydrated foods, but, is it pretty practical for someone to just kind of do their own? You know, kind of save money maybe, or, and where about would we go to maybe find, on the internet to kind of do it ourselves?
Well, there's all kinds of ways of preparing food. I was going to make mention earlier when we were talking about my parents or my grandparents putting away food, and Stan's parents. Most people don't know what a Kerr jar or a ball jar or a mason jar is and what it's for today. You go to the market and you see them look down like, what in the world is that for? But there are ways to store food. A lot of the beans and the corn, the grains and stuff store very well inside plastic buckets. And there's a neat way of get a ceiling, a bucket that's clean, a food grade bucket. Take a piece of CO2, dry ice, which is frozen CO2, about the size of a pack of cigarettes, maybe a little bit larger. Place it in the bottom of the bucket. Fill it with your grains. Put the lid, just lay it on it. Let that CO2 melt. You know how you've seen CO2, if you drop it in water, it makes off the real cold cloud. It looks like a fog.
Oh,
you've
yeah.
seen it in movies.
Right? Oh, yeah.
When that melts, it'll displace all the oxygen that's in that bucket. Then once it's melted, gently put the lid on and tighten it up, and you've now have an inert gas atmosphere. I do that in my business with nitrogen, but I do it exponentially inside of a can. I do big chamber loads of them at a time. And you, in essence, you've got an inert gas, dry atmosphere, and you've got storage food.
That's fantastic, man. That's great. Could I ask one more question?
Mm-hmm.
What, I was watching on the PBS, you guys were talking about that, some stuff they were talking about on PBS earlier, and they were talking about the Mormons, how they got these big, huge granaries, man, just loaded up with food, stored up. Now, from what they were saying on that show, that's going to be made available at a time of emergency to people. So, you know, what? How do you feel, like, is that going to be any kind of a substantial amount? I mean, do you factor that into your emergency thoughts? Or, you know, I'll go ahead and hang up and let you comment, and I'll turn the radio back.
That's the first. I know that they own some large companies, large food processing companies, because that's part of their religious bent, is to be ready, to have a supply of food. Now, about these, let's say they have granaries in Utah. A lot of good it's going to do you in Michigan in a disaster. You need to have it in your house.
Right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's just the way it is. It belongs to someone else. And it's a long ways away. That's not
well,
doing you any good.
I don't know much about it, but I did see on that show on the PBS where they're talking about they have something, I think they called it the Bishop Storehouse.
Yes.
Have that in every state or they were talking about that and how they were helping out with the disaster when the hurricane came in and wiped everything out. That, like, they were the only ones on the street. Now, that was pretty interesting, and I was just bringing it up because I just heard you talking. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, I'm kind of the kind of person when I listen to a talk show, rather than just agree with everything, I like to try to think, well, what part didn't they cover, you know, and let's call up and say, you know, it's just so every angle gets covered, that's all.
Well, no, let me tell you, certainly the Mormons are good people. I disagree with them theologically, but I never knew a Mormon I didn't like. The good people, they do, part of their religion is to store food. It's very interesting that recently I understand that one of the leading Mormons had reiterated again the importance at this time in history of laying in a large supply of food and emphasizing the importance. Now, we know that before Y2K, of course, many of the Mormons were storing up, and we actually were able to get into a Mormon cannery. And they were very, very gracious and let us come in. We were able to take one morning. They certainly provided the food. We had to pay for it. We had to pay for all the things that we utilized, but they were very economical. However, we were one of the last groups who were allowed to get in there. And after that, they said, no, right now we want to get the Mormons to be in here and get them all stocked with food. So that's really, we were very, very fortunate to be able to get in and lay in a supply of their food, and we learned how to can and all of the things that the Mormons do. So I think that, James, your job is to look after yourself and hope that, you know, if we get into trouble, there'll be somebody to help, but you can never depend on anybody else, you know. And if you put your hands in your pocket, you may find that you don't have any hands to help you.
I've had my 2 year supply stored up rotation since 99, so I'm good.
All right, good for you. Well, thanks. Anything else, James, before we let you go?
No, keep up the good work, man. Keep the information flowing. That's the key to freedom right there is education. So keep it going.
Okay, your job is to tell everybody back there in Michigan about our programs, okay?
And they internet. Everyone will know. Yes, sir.
They're available on the internet at radioliberty.com or on globalstar.com. They're available on shortwave. They're available on Telstar 5 satellite, and then, of course, on your local radio station. So thanks very much for calling, James.
Okay, thank you.
You're right. Bye-bye. And our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, David, are you seeing any increased interest in food storage at the present time? Certainly with all the things going on, why I would think that there'd be at least some increasing interest.
There's an increasing interest, but it's very small, but that part is firm. There are people, and it's my wife and I refer to them as the Volvo crowd, the people that would never, had never, they're new to the idea of preparedness. They don't know where to start. They come to us for information, and they tend to, a lot of the new ones tend to overanalyze or analysis by paralysis, and it'll take them months to make a decision on what they want. I've had some people put in multiple years of food. When I say multiple, some of them up in 7 years of food for their families all at one time, and that hasn't happened in a long time. But I was going to make a mention back there when James was on about the Mormon, the LDS Church. They're really a great church. They do some fantastic things. When a disaster strikes, they're basically almost invariably the first ones there doing the most with the most help. So there's a lot of praise to be heaped on that church. But if you go to their website, there's a section there about preparedness and their big push about laying away a store of food. They're quite aware of the threats to our existence right now, and they're really pushing it.
All right, fine. Now, you mentioned, of course, to use a plastic pail that was food grade. What's the difference between a food grade and a non-food grade plastic pail?
Well, usually, there's the purity of the plastic. Some pails are what are called regrinds. They've been recycled. They're sometimes 2 and 3 times. They just put a dye in them, melt them back down, and they're reused. And that doesn't necessarily make them bad, but if you're going to go put food away, get a food-grade pail, one that is brand new, made from virgin high-density polyethylene, that's what it'll be made of, and start there. Don't use just an old colored paint bucket or anything like that.
All right, fine. Now, what about using cans? I mean, years ago, I can remember 40 years ago, they used to use, of course, tin containers with a lid that could be sealed.
A can, nothing protects like a can. You take a can, and especially the cans we use that they're enameled. They're enameled on the inside and the outside, so the material won't rust. And properly sealed, a can is the best way to go, because you drop it, it dents. Glass protects very well, but allows light through. And if you drop it, we all know what happens to glass when it drops.
All right, fine. And Chris, essentially, what are the most popular foods that people are buying? Are they buying wheat? Are they buying corn? Are they buying... you mentioned that there's a shortage of apples. Why is there a shortage of apples?
All I could find from my suppliers is last year the apple crop was short. It just didn't materialize like it should have. That's what I'm getting from my suppliers. Now, is that because the bee problem began to manifest itself last year? Do not know. Now, I do know that some of the stuff that I've read about bees, that they're reflecting back and looking back, that maybe this problem has been around with us or building for several years now, and they've just misinterpreted it as something else, like one of the threats to the bees are mites and some viruses and other stressful attacks on them. They just played it off to that, laid it off to that. That was the problem. But maybe it's bigger than they thought.
And what about the other fruits there, the peaches and apricots and other dried fruits? Are they readily available?
At the moment, yes. But again, those are the, when you said peaches and almost all the fruits are pollinated by a pollinator. They're not pollinated on the wind like a grain or a field crop would be.
All right, fine. What do you think the most essential things are for people to have in the way of stored food?
Oh, you could approach this many different ways. A good balance of food, the fruits, the legumes, the beans, the rice, corn, the staples for sure, but you're going to get, if you had a year of just that, you'd be miserable. You need to put away fruit, dairy products, dried dairy products, so you have proteins. Oh my, I wasn't ready for that question. just everything you eat on your daily, on a daily basis, look at your daily diet and put more of it away.
All right, fine. And Sydney, what about mashed potatoes, things like that? And then what about, you know, rice? You really have to cook the rice, don't you? Because if you just were to take the regular rice that comes in bags, wouldn't that become rancid in a relatively short period of time?
If you stored it relatively short, when I say relatively short, that's a storage function. It's the old saying, water goes where it isn't. So that's why you want to get it into a watertight container, like a bucket, or in my case, I put them in cans, because then I can predict the outcome, which is a long time. But to leave a bag of rice out, it will pick up moisture and eventually will lose. Plus, it's also subject to infestation and rodents, depending on your storage. So get it protected. And the other thing is, most people have to realize that there could be a threat come along to where you can't stay home. You may have to move. And your food storage should be transportable. Bags of food, and again, if you were talking about water earlier, barrels of water are great, but have a way to transfer that into something that you can throw 5, 10, 20 gallons of water in smaller containers into your car, so wherever you go, you've got enough water to get you potentially where you want to be. And you have to assume that there are no water staples and necessities along the way.
Well, of course, if we ever had a chaotic situation, you wonder how you'd be able to ready to travel on the highways. Everybody else would be doing the same thing.
That's very true.
We know very well that they'd have the National Guard, or maybe they'd have Blackwater or the other mercenary professional killers out there guarding our streets, because all of our men are going to be over in Iraq and Afghanistan and maybe in Iran and heaven only knows what other countries. Maybe they'll be in Venezuela at the time, and so we'll have to bring in mercenary troops, sort of like King George did back in the 1776, 77, 78 here to put down the unruly Americans.
Well, it's funny you should say that about the National Guard, because on that news article with Katie Couric about the bees yesterday, they also did an article about how ill-prepared the National Guard is for any disaster. All the equipment is, some of the Guard units are down 70-plus percent on equipment. One unit had two broke-down, war-weary, here domestically, Humvees, and that's all the unit had. Everything else is out of the country, broke down. The money has been appropriated to buy new equipment, but it won't be fulfilled for 5 years. If there's a disaster and you're depending upon the Guard and the government to come to you, they may show up in a couple months on bicycles. So this is all part of the preparedness that you need to prepare for, is that help may not be available.
And I share your concern, David. I think every American should realize that the purpose of our National Guard, the purpose of our reserve, really, was to protect America and not to send people around the world, because the president wants to have a war. I mean, after all, why did we go into Afghanistan? Why, we went into Afghanistan to catch the wicked Osama bin Laden. But we never tried to catch him. And we're still not trying to catch him. Once we got in there, of course, then we decided to change the thrust. And instead of trying to get Osama bin Laden, we decided to invade Iraq, because we had to stop Saddam Hussein from using those weapons of mass destruction, and maybe deciding one day he was going to attack New York or maybe San Francisco with him. And then we didn't find any weapons of mass destruction. And now we've got to attack Iran, and who knows who else we're going to have to attack. But as a result, we do not have a National Guard at home to look after America. And remember those words of Charles Lindbergh, who said when American soldiers go overseas to fight for freedom, we often find that we are losing our freedom at home. When American boys go overseas to fight for freedom, we often find we lose our freedom at home. And ladies and gentlemen, I would like to suggest that's exactly what's happening. I think that what we need to do, of course, is begin to carefully analyze what's going on and understand that freedom is lost when good people, of course, are not involved. And men and women become accomplices to the evils they failed to oppose. We'll be back in just a moment with David Sibley to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, David, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, the threats are many. The apathy is high. I don't know if it's just pure apathy or people that are afraid they'd be ashamed to prepare. But in my lifetime, the whole idea of preparedness is just gone in most people. Again, like I was telling you earlier, my grandparents, and even my parents got away from it as time went on, about preparedness, even though they knew the threats because they both grew up in the Depression. But any little thing right now, the die may have been cast for a crop failure already with the bee problem and the drought. One outbreak of hostilities between Iran, the Strait of Hormuz gets closed. There may be food, but it won't be moving to you because there won't be enough oil. Call out the National Guard. Can't. They don't have the equipment. And besides, they're in another country. Nothing is as it should be, and you're the ones going to pay the price. Your listener, if should they not be prepared. And any of this stuff begin to raise its ugly head.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and this is one reason we like to have David on from time to time. Because, very often he will call me and say, hey, what do you hear about what's going on? And he's very concerned, not simply with the, because he's in the food business, but he's concerned, I think, sincerely, because so many of our people have not made preparations. There's almost it's sort of like you don't want to go to the doctor because you don't want to find out you got a cancer, you got some serious illness, so it's far better off not to make that appointment to go to the doctor or to go to the dentist because you sure don't want to have somebody working on your teeth and finding out you got cavities and, well, if you don't go to the doctor, why, they won't find you have a cancer. If you don't go to the dentist, they won't find you have cavities, and so then you don't have to worry. But ladies and gentlemen, I think with mature people begin to realize there is a problem and they prepare to face it. And so I certainly hope that many of you will give serious consideration to beginning to make the preparations that you would need to protect your family and your friends and your neighbors, because many of them may not make any preparations, but you have a moral obligation to do your best at least to help those who are immediately close by you. So, then, David, do you have a parting thought before we let you go?
Well, don't get caught in the 7-Eleven syndrome. When I say that, it's most people can't go a day without stopping in at a 7-Eleven. Can you imagine having to go 6 months or a year without a functional 7-Eleven? It's up to you. If the preparedness is in your hands.
Okay, bye-bye. We're out of time. Good night. God bless.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly I sincerely believe that people should be making preparations and thinking about how they're going to get their water filtered, perhaps with a Berkey unit to have it on hand so they'll have drinkable water or have barrels of water or pumps or the things that you would need if you'd be interested in getting a food catalog, emergency food catalog. Of course, you could always call us at 1-800-544-8927. We'd be glad to send it to you free of charge. If you'd like a health catalog, we'd be glad to send you one. If you'd like a routine, just a regular catalog. So you could begin thinking about what's going on in our society, why we are really over in Iran, really over in Iraq and Afghanistan? Are we really fighting terrorism over there? If we were to leave there, would the Al-Qaeda terrorists follow us home here? I mean, think back 10 years. Did you hear anything about Al-Qaeda 10 years ago? Is Osama bin Laden really responsible for what's going on? Have you been to the FBI's 10 Most Wanted Man site? You can get it off the Internet. Google in FBI Most Wanted, and you'll pick up a picture of Osama bin Laden there. But you know the most amazing thing? They talk about how he's wanted, and there's a reward for him because of the bombing of the embassies, but no mention of 911. Gee, how could that be? How could it be that the FBI doesn't know about 911? They say that he's suspected of being involved with terrorist activities throughout the world, but no mention of this major reason that America went to war. Maybe you should call the FBI and explain to them that the president told us that Osama bin Laden was responsible for 911, and that's why we went to in Afghanistan. So many American boys have been killed, and the Afghans killed, and then, of course, that's why we went to war in Iraq, because somehow or other Osama bin Laden was associated with Saddam Hussein, and doesn't even mention that on the 10 Most Wanted. But why don't you check it out? You can find that on the Internet. So many things. What you really need to do, of course, is go to my website at RadioLiberty.com to read what really happened on 911. Why, of course, the newsletters from August to December of 2006. You could pull them down for nothing and read them. And then, of course, my newsletter, February of 2007, why we are really in going to war with Iran, in my estimation. That is February 2007. Get these newsletters, and then, of course, you'll want to get, I hope, or at least many of you will want to see my DVD, Brotherhood of Darkness. It's available for nothing up on the Internet. Google in DVD, Brotherhood of Darkness, or it should be a video, Brotherhood of Darkness, and you can see it there. If you'd like to know more about that, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. I believe my DVD, Forbidden Secret, will give you insight into the secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years, and you need to know what that secret is. If you want to understand the secret that's being featured by Oprah Winfrey and Larry King and Jim Carrey and Jack Canfield of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, why, of course, Rhonda Burns has pushed a concept, there's a secret, and she sold 2 million books and a couple of million DVDs. But do you really understand what she's talking about? Well, we have something called The Secret Behind the Secret. It's a 4-tape set. We'll give you tremendous insight, as well, of course, the DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and the riddles in stone. Well, anyway, if you'd like more information, my telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV, war, because America truly is under attack today. And so please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and ministry, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow evening at the same time, when we'll be back with you on the same station, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.